gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Pipes is writing down a lot of stuff. I'm just going to go from the gut. And joining us now, Coach Bielma.
Josh Whitman joining us now.
You get to say all the cool name drops.
Do it.
Brad Underwood, our guest.
College hoop.
How do you lose to Jackson State?
Call up every single person in the media that didn't put Kofi first team All-American. And, I don't know, just play like clown noises.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh, Michael Porter Jr. has been good, but he thinks the earth is flat, so I can't pick him.
Oh, boy.
Throw it up to Kofi, and he's just going to tear the rim off.
How is he so good?
All right, Hans, I'm going to mute you for a while.
Okay.
So what we want to do is build a same-game parlay that will win all of us some money.
Maybe Rondale Moore could be Cooper Kupp, but he's not.
Is it Instagram?
Yeah.
Is that what IG means?
I think you have to win the Big Ten title to win Big Ten Player of the Year.
Woohoo! They're back.
It is The Drive. Derek Piper, Joey Wagner filling in as my guest co-host today. Lante on assignment, Trevor Valise on vacation. You drinking margaritas at 5 o'clock? Oh, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, but that's the dumbest question I've ever asked on air.
Hope he's had a couple for a while.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too. Trevor, if you're listening, I hope you're listening for what we're about to talk about as we get good news. Hey, Cardinals fans are happy again. If you're just tuning in, they did lose today in the 10th inning. Pete Alonso hit a pretty epic blast to left field on Giovanni Gallegos to win the game for the Mets, win the series for the Mets in New York, take 3 out of 4. The Cardinals fall to 20-18, just 4 games back in the Central, but you're also only 3.5 games up on the Pittsburgh Pirates, if that gives you perspective. And the Mets have been a big problem for the Cardinals. Of course, you're measuring yourself against a team like that that's going to be a big player in the playoff picture, and you've lost 5 out of 7. And really just have kind of been owned by them. But the good news, Joey, and I'll let you be the deliverer of good news, as you often are on Atlanta Inquirer and on our message board.
Nolan Gorman, he's up. They're calling him up. He'll start at second base tomorrow against the Pirates. They're bringing up Matthew Liberatore, who will start the pitcher, the top pitching. I think he's the top pitching prospect in the organization. He will start on Saturday against the Pirates. It's time, Derek. Finally.
Everything is awesome. I'm trying to find the drop on here, but of course I'm a rookie. I don't know.
We warned.
Oh wait.
People. Let the party begin!
There it is. How about that?
Nailed it.
And for the Cubs?
We suck.
Thank you. Hope you're listening, Trev. If you're not, you can podcast us. And for all you Cubs fans, yeah, you've heard the annoying storylines. Nolan Gorman, Matthew Liberatore, they're best friends, they're buddies. Liberatore got traded to the Cardinals organization so they could team up in the minor leagues. No, they're getting called up together. What a storybook. I wouldn't say ending. Ending, hopefully, of their minor league
start
career.
Start of the storybook.
Yeah, start of the – what an epic lead. What an epic –
I hope someone uses that. You credit me if you do. I hope someone uses that.
They should.
Derek, this team, it just felt like it needed – something. It's just you're treading water a little bit. Obviously, the shortstop situation's been kind of a mess. Brendan Donovan's been nice. Is that sustainable? I don't know. So if Gorman starts the second, my guess is Tommy Edman moves over to shortstop. That would make the only sense to me. You can't take him out of the field. So you get a little shakeup in there. It had to be done. Tyler O'Neill to the IL, which should mean more Yepes moving forward in the outfield.
Yep.
Starting to see a little bit of that. Is this urgency? I don't know if this is urgency
so.
Or not. I think it might be. I think.
I know that Mike Claiborne, our good friend, always says Flag Day is really the time when you can start to get the clear picture of where a team's trending and if this is teams for real. I mean, it's played 38 games. It's still very early on in the season, but now that you're flirting with 500, and I fully agree, this team needs a little bit of a shot in the arm. This offense is not consistent enough with the home runs that Nolan Gorman's putting up in AAA. Why not get that pop in the order? And the fact that there hasn't been consistent production. Now, as you said correctly, Brendan Donovan has provided a spark recently starting at shortstop after a little bit of a slow first week or so when he first came up. But Edmundo Sosa's been hitting 200, and now he's hurt. And as we know, Paul DeJong got sent down because he was literally almost below 100. So that's how poor it's been. O'Neal has been struggling. Maybe it is an injury. I don't know, ultimately.
Yeah, it's been tough. I mean, it's because he was the guy you were looking at in this lineup as one of the three anchors, I guess, when you look at Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt. And you haven't seen that from him. Look, there is concern still about Nolan Gorman, right? In 147 plate appearances, he struck out 50 times. That is concerning. Now, he also has 15 home runs, which is delightful.
Yes.
But you do wonder about his defense at second. I mean, that's kind of been the calling a little bit of the Cardinals, right, is that the defense, especially up the middle, has got to be sure. I don't know that I worry about Edmund at shortstop, but you got to have Gorman be serviceable defensively, and hopefully he can maybe bring up some of those home runs, and the strikeouts are going to follow, right? You don't get called up and strike out less, I wouldn't think.
If you hit, now this is AAA numbers, I get it. It's hard to carry that over in terms of to say a number of what he's hitting as far as average or OPS and say, well, he's going to hit that in the majors, but he's hitting 308, OPS over 1,000, like you said, 15 bombs, 23 RBIs. He strikes out a third of the time. Like, he has 133 at-bats, 50 strikeouts. That's a lot of Ks. But, I mean, you're going to get out. I mean, the best hitters in baseball, as the old saying goes, gets out. They get out two every three times.
Yeah, but if they can put the ball in play, that's the more favorable out.
It absolutely is, but we have guys like Harrison Bader who have been waiting to get on base a little bit more.
He still hasn't seen a curveball he can do anything.
No, definitely not. Paul DeJong wasn't doing a whole lot. There's been a whole lot of swing and miss with Tyler O'Neill. So I'm just color me intrigued and super excited for Nolan Gorman, and maybe he can provide that spark. I know that I was listening to the game on the drive over, and it was Rick Horton and John Rooney talking about Tommy Edman made a fantastic play at second base, and they said, I hope he doesn't move from second where he's been a Gold Glover. I hope he stays there so he can stay within, I'm paraphrasing now, or just kind of reading the tea leaves of what they were saying, that you don't take him out of his element where he's been one of the best in baseball at defending at second. I wonder if they knew anything. I'm guessing they didn't based on that comment, because Gorman coming up says to me, you got to move Tommy to short. You got to play Gorman at second. Not that Gorman can't DH it sometimes, but Edman, as I told Lon a week or so ago, when he first came up, he played literally everywhere. He played third, he played short, he played second, he played the outfield. I don't see why he can't be good enough, or he could be spectacular at shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I think you know what he is at second base, but you also know shortstop's been disastrous.
Yes.
I mean, if you're 80% of the fielder at short that you are at second, and that means you can get maybe a jolt at second, look, you got to, there's a pro and con here. And maybe Gorman comes up and he's not ready, and then you have to step back and put him back at second, and everybody's happy on the radio broadcast, I guess. I don't know, but you got
to. How about the people listening to the radio? Let's make those people happy because they want to see Nolan Gorman.
I sure do. Yeah, I hope it works out, and you hope he's good enough defensively, and the offense comes with. This is exciting, Derek. We've been waiting for this, and the numbers he kept putting up. It's like, oh boy, they're going to have to figure this out sooner rather than later, and I didn't know that it was going to be today after they got walked off against the Mets, but I'm excited. And that's not even factoring in Liberatore, who I think addresses a huge need pitching-wise. The pitching, the depth that they've gone in games out of the starters has really more or less been underwhelming a lot of the time. Steven Matz has been a tough watch.
Yes.
Some of the bullpen has been a tough watch. I think there's more bullpen shakeups probably on the way, as the reporting out of St. Louis, or I guess out of New York, indicates right now.
I can only watch T.J. McFarland get rocked so many more times.
I know he's my limit.
He was pretty good last year. I guess I could kind of forgot that. I was getting angry last night. I was hate watching the Cardinals after he gave up a bomb to Alonso, and I was like, his ERA was under 3 last year out of the bullpen. I guess he was pretty good. This year, it's
9. His ERA now is 9.
Yikes.
That's stinky.
That's pretty darn bad. Pretty darn bad. Whitley's been bad. I mean, outside of Helsley, Gallegos gives up the bomb today. It's not been great. I wonder when Alex Reyes is back.
Hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon enough.
Hopefully.
Even like in the setup role, that'd be good. But on the note of Liberatore, he was the 16th overall pick in the 2018 draft. Of course, in the trade for Randy Arozarena, right?
No, right? He was the one who came over from the Mariners.
That was O'Neill came from the Mariners.
That's right. Then it must have been Rosarena.
I think it was Rosarena.
Yeah, you're right.
I will double check that. But looking at his stats here in AAA this year, 22 years old, he's made 7 starts, 3.83 ERA. He's 3-3 record, and he has 46 Ks through 40 innings. So not overwhelming strikeout numbers. He is striking out about 10.5 per nine. But I have been pretty, speaking of the bullpen and maybe putting a guy in a setup role, we've talked about Jordan Hicks maybe being his arm being more suited for a starting role. It's kind of funny, though, and I have thought about this. Remember when Carlos Martinez couldn't stay healthy as a starter? Like, oh, well, he can't shoulder the load of pitching 5-6 innings. Let's put him in the bullpen where he will have a fresher arm and we can manage a little bit more in terms of his health. The funny thing is, well, Hicks can't pitch every, you know, 2 out of every 3 days. We got to start him. Hicks is not pitched all that great. His ERA is about 5. He had a rough outing last night. Maybe he's a guy that now needs a transition to come out of the bullpen and Libertor as a starter. But you mentioned it there with Mats. This team does need that help in the rotation as we, of course, await Jack Flaherty's return whenever that's going to happen.
Yeah, Hicks has started 6 of his 8 games, and in total he's thrown 25.2 innings over the course of 8 games.
It's not a lot.
At some point, you're hurting yourself on the back end there in the bullpen. And remember, Jack Flaherty at some point, I hope, will be back. And then you've got to really figure some things out in terms of your rotation and how this looks. And maybe that conversation is harder if Libertor pitches well. Like, I know you and I hope very, very much that he does. But the bullpen is a concern because, one, they've not really produced, and two, they've been used a lot. Derek, like a lot, and that's just, it's tough, and it's really tough when you got to rely on so many bullpen innings there.
I know someone on the text line from a 217 says Gallegos in all caps is not a closer.
No,
we were sitting here talking about going into the 10th. Hopefully, Helsley comes back out after a clean 9th inning, and has he given up an earned run yet this year? Maybe one.
Oh, that's what I'm looking for. Right, where's he at here?
It's a long time, but no.
Zero. It was 1.2 innings.
As Stevie mentioned, we were watching. I think he's given up 1 run, but it was unearned.
2 walks, 1 run, 23 strikeouts.
Jeez.
In 12.2 innings. I like that guy.
He's been fantastic. And I think he had a pitch that registered, what, 103 plus?
I think that's right. I mean, he's been, maybe you turn it over to him as the closer. I don't know, but it's, you always like it's you get so tired of hearing it, Derek, in like February or March, and every reporter, every manager is like, oh, there's not enough pitching. You're like, okay, whatever. And every time it comes to be May, it comes to be June, it's like, you know what, there's probably not enough pitching there. And I think you're seeing that a little bit, and it's been frustrating.
Someone also asked about Jack Flaherty. I see an article written today on MLB.com where he's quoted as saying everything feels great. Flaherty ramping up his shoulder rehab. I have to read through this.
I know he's been throwing some bullpens.
Yep. I have to read through and see when exactly, maybe they don't even share that, his return is supposed to be. He was supposed to miss a couple of months. Maybe it'll be June?
This can't be soon enough, Derek.
Cannot be soon enough.
They need him. I mean, Michaelis, Wainwright.
And Michaelis has been good.
Yeah. You can't fault what you. 1.6 ERA for 1.68, excuse me, ERA for Michaelis. Take that every day of the week. Wainwright, 3.5 at 40 years old or whatever. Thumbs up, man. Good for you. The rest, that ain't it. Hudson's been okay. I mean, I know he settled down today a little bit, but it was a rough start for him. I think he threw 30 pitches in the first inning, gave up 2 runs. Frankly, he should have given up a lot more had it not been for Nolan Arenado bailing him out with a one-man double play. But, man, it can't be soon enough for Flaherty.
Absolutely. I know that Waino has carried that torch when Flaherty's battled these injuries, and he's pitched like an ace when he's got the age of a guy that you'd just be happy if he was like your third or fourth starter.
If he had a 3.75 ERA this year, I don't think I'd be upset. Would you?
Not if Flaherty's healthy and doing what he's supposed to do at the top of the rotation. I'm glad that we're actually seeing 2018 version of Miles Michaelis again. I didn't think we'd ever see that again. I thought he was maybe cooked.
That was concerning. Yeah, had it not been for him and really Wainwright, and those guys have done pretty well. Given you, I mean, they're the only 2 guys more than 40 innings. I know I'm harping on that, but this catches up to you. We saw it last year where you kind of look down the road and you're like, it's going to be July and you're going to have a lot of really, really tired arms because the innings don't, they don't just go away, man. You've got to fill those. But yeah, if you get Flaherty back and, you know, 315 is more than you could reasonably ask for out of Adam Wainwright.
Absolutely.
That's incredible.
He might get hit around every once in a while, but he's also going to have that eight innings, only gives up five hits and maybe one run or less.
And it's going to be like 95 degrees when he does it on a day.
Oh,
you
yeah.
wouldn't think that he's going to be able to do it. And then you turn it on or you catch up because it's probably going to be a Saturday, a day game. You're going to be out doing something. You'll check your phone. It's like, oh, he threw, you know, eight innings and he threw 95 pitches and it was a million degrees outside and you won't even be shocked.
Definitely not. Love that guy. How about big picture thoughts on the Cardinals as a whole? Maybe level of concern or just early on, of course, there was the, okay, Pujols is back. The lineup's hitting. O'Neill had a fantastic opening day, a really good first week, and looked like, okay, this is the same guy we saw last year who bashed, what was it, 38 home runs, 36, 38, whatever it might be. A bona fide middle-of-the-order hitter. Arenado started off super hot, looked like an MVP, and he still is an MVP candidate, although the average has dipped. He was well over, he was over 350 at one point. Now he's down at 297. Goldie's gotten hot, so that's been good to see. But this offense showed flashes maybe in the first couple of weeks. Like, they could be one of the better offenses in the National League with the pitching that you got to get through Flaherty being out. But here recently, it's just been overall inconsistency with the team, and I think that it's very frustrating with the lineup's inconsistencies because outside of Goldie here recently, what are you really hanging your hat on? I mean, Yepes and Goldie seems like the two guys that you can really, over the last 2 weeks, can really rely on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Albert Pujols has given about what I thought he could give to this team. And the role that he has, I have no complaints there. Like, it's not the magical, the king is back and he bashes baseballs all over the yard. Hopefully no one expected that out of him. But
I wanted it, but I didn't necessarily expect it.
I thought you guys were going to name Cade Albert Pujols Piper, especially after he hit that home run a couple days before.
He did.
Before Cade made his appearance. But yeah, outside of Goldschmidt and Yepes, the starting outfield on opening day, Tyler O'Neill, Harrison Bader, Dylan Carlson. Dylan Carlson has the best average at 237.
Oof.
I mean, the outfield is just not getting it done. Offensively, that is. And combined, those guys have, okay, seven home runs. All right. But what's Tyler O'Neill done since his first two?
I know.
I mean, he only recently got the second one. It's just been, I feel like it's every year they think they can just get by just enough, right? And this will work. It doesn't. It doesn't work. And it's May and it's June, and you're like, hey. And then they somehow piece it together
right.
a little bit, and it's like, okay, well, all right. And then, for the last couple of years, it hadn't really done much. But, man, you should have questions. You either need guys to get hot and figure it out, or hopefully this call-up here is a little bit of a shot in the arm.
Of course, you're not going to see what we just witnessed Sunday Night Baseball, where they beat up Carlos Rodon, one of the best pitchers in the game, and they tallied 11-plus runs, and it might have even been more than that. Maybe it was like 14 at the end of the game, 15.
And then you don't see them hit again.
They don't hit the next night in New York.
It's unbelievably up and down with these guys.
Need more consistency. So we've seen the potential. I still feel really good about Arenado having a great season. Goldie, very encouraging signs. He's red hot right now.
He goes nuclear, just like the snap of a finger. Next thing you know, he's just mashing.
Absolutely. He went 3-for-4 today, 4 RBIs. Yepes, I'm all for him getting more reps without O'Neill. Trust Edmund at the top. Throw Gorman in there. We just need more out of Carlson. Pujols and Dickerson. Like that DH tandem is not what you ultimately wanted. Now, I think you probably expect more out of Dickerson, and you kind of had a sense that Pujols would be limited. Bader at 240, Kisner at 250, and Yachty hitting 238. That's leaving a lot to be desired, too.
It is. But here we are. We complain, and like we said, they put it together, and you kind of forget. Like, when's it going to happen? I'm so impatient. Like, it's only May.
Yeah.
This is going to be such a long season, but you just want to see it start to click a little bit more.
Absolutely. And we'll take a glance around the NL. We got the Mets with a National League leading by beating the Cardinals today, 26-14. They're 7 games up on Philadelphia, who's 18-20. The Miami Marlins, sneaky competitive. I mean, they're 17-20. They're ahead of the the World Series champion Atlanta Braves at 17-21. Look at the Central, Milwaukee Brewers 24-14, leading the division. The Cardinals 4 games back. The Pirates 16-21. The Cubs right behind that at 15-21. And the Reds 11-26. You know, they're actually a little
they're up
bit
to 11. They're up to 11.
They're up to 11. We thought that might have been the updated season win total you could bet on DraftKings. You might be cashing wins if you took the over on that, but. The Dodgers in the West, 25-12. San Diego without Tatis, still 24-14. The Giants continue to win at 22-15. That's a very competitive division because even at the bottom, you got the Rockies, 18-19, and the D-backs in last place at 18-21. So that is your updated National League standings. I wouldn't say contractual obligations, but just so the White Sox fans that we do have around the area, I will mention, maybe they don't want me to, 19-19. Second place in the AL Central, 3 games back behind the Minnesota Twins. There's your baseball conversation. Hey, I'm in a good mood about Gorman and Libertor coming up, and we got the Pirates coming into town. Let's beat up on them, feel a little bit better about ourselves. Gorman hits 2 home runs in the series, and we're in a little bit better spirits about where the Cardinals are in May. How about that?
I hope so. Katie Wu from The Athletic just reported that the expectation is Edman at short, Gorman at second will be the infield moving forward.
So, I like it. It makes sense.
Hey,
things are making sense.
Both feet in. Both feet in.
Let's do it. All right, we're going to catch a break. When we come back, let us know if you have any topics. I know we've had some texts. I said I would get to those. I will do that after this break. We had someone weigh in about Kofi's fit in the NBA. We can also talk a little bit more about NIL, Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban. That's an ongoing thing that never ends as far as content, and we thank them for that in the middle of the summer. Maybe we preview a little bit of tonight's games. The NBA Finals, Game 2, Celtics and Heat are going on tonight, and also some NHL, Lons Blues, Game 2 in St. Louis. Need to get one, or no, I should say Game 2 in Colorado, trying to go back to St. Louis, 1-1 all square. Lot to do as we go along. This is The Drive.
Illini fans, stop by Game Day Spirit to shop the hottest selection of Fighting Illini gear in town. As graduation looms closer for many of our seniors, what better way to celebrate their time at U of I than to head down to Game Day Spirit? Shop their Illini classics through great brands like Nike and Champion, plus a lot of great novelties to complete your experience. Shop with us in-store at the corner of 6th and Green in Campus Town, on the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign, or online anytime at GameDaySpirit.com. Game Day Spirit. Where Illini fans shop.
Prairie Gardens greenhouses are loaded with beautiful flowers. Flowers, flowers everywhere. Outrageous color, outrageous quality, incredible prices. This week at Prairie Gardens, beautiful geraniums $177. Clematis only $14.97. Basil, parsley, and lavender herbs $197. Ginormous six packs of white petunias $7.97. Bzzz, mosquito plants $2.97. And perennials $5.97. Plus so many flowering baskets, herbs, your favorite veggies too. Prairie Gardens, locally owned. Extraordinary gardening.
Hi, my name is Kelly Doherty with OSF Healthcare, and I am a certified nurse midwife in the obstetrics and gynecology department. It's such a thrill being a part of a great team bringing life into the world. We have so many different options for expecting mothers to choose when it comes to our services. For example, the open birthing rooms that can facilitate guests and having a special playlist of music to help soothe mom during delivery. These help tap into what I do as a midwife and really bond during the birthing process to focus on mom and baby and getting them close to each other as soon as possible. We also offer water therapy and other alternative labor management options. Resting, recuperating, and getting a good meal are all on our radar to make a family comfortable in this new chapter, and you'll find it all at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center. If expecting parents want to explore their options, just visit our website to meet with me or any of our staff and get a tour of our fabulous state-of-the-art facility, including our labor and delivery suites and our special care nursery. Visit our website for all the details at osfhealthcare.org.
Hey, this is Ben Grice at the Humble Hog in downtown Paxton. And if you haven't been up to Paxton for our barbecue yet, let me tell you, you don't need a reservation. Just come on up. Barbecue with us is about as casual can get. We've got all your favorites. We're talking brisket, pork, amazing smoked turkey, our sausage. And while you're there, be sure to try the Paxton Punch. You can thank me on that later. Check us out online at humblehogbbq.com.
Hi, it's Stevie J. Start your day with me along with Diane Ducey, weekday morning 7 to 9, here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Drive with Tay and Piper, Derek Piper, Joey Wagner from LinieEnquirer.com. So kind enough to join us today, filling in for Lon. Big shoes to fill. How do you feel about it?
It is big shoes to fill. I feel all right. I feel okay. Well, we'll see. I'm sure Lon will have some critiques for me, but that's good.
As we roll along, we talked a lot of Cardinals in that last segment. Nolan Gorman, Matthew Liberatore. That was a mouthful. Matthew Liberatore coming up to start on Saturday, as you said, against the Pirates. Gorman expected to be in the lineup tomorrow on Apple TV against those Pittsburgh Pirates. We talked about Kofi in the NBA Combine in the first segment. We got a little bit more to discuss about that as we get to a text here. 217 says, wouldn't smaller lineups have a hard time guarding Kofi on the block and rebounding? He has limitations, but to counter a small lineup may struggle to keep him off the boards and getting to the block. Xavier Tillman, of course, the Spartans product, now playing for Memphis.
I think that's right. Yeah, it feels like Memphis has, it's like the Michigan State to Memphis.
Yeah, right, Jaren Jackson. Xavier Tillman doesn't have a good shot, and he's getting regular minutes. I just feel Kofi can at least get, you know, 8 minutes a game or so. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, I don't disagree with what he'll be able to do offensively, but a smaller lineup, you have to guard on the other end. That's where I know it sounds like kind of a broken record, but that's what you keep coming back to is, can he, you know, handle those smaller lineups? Yeah, he'll punish. I think even without smaller lineups, he'd be okay down there as a rim runner, as an offensive rebound, as a glass crasher. But you got to do it on, the other end, and that's where I'd kind of get a little hesitant.
Absolutely, and that's just something that's going to stick with him, and it's going to be something that he's going to have to prove people wrong, or just prove that his limitations at that end can balance out with what he brings with the rebounding, with the offense, and that it's not a huge negative where all of a sudden, I know we talk about plus minus, but just in general, like when he's on the floor, you're not getting exploited so much to where it doesn't balance out. He's got to be able to, if you're going to have lineups where he can't switch, can you have other players that can get through screens and do some things that maybe is unnatural now in the NBA versus when there were those big lumbering big guys. Although I'm not saying they didn't run pick and roll. Pick and roll has been around forever, but there was a lot of block to block. Let's throw it in and let Alonzo Mourning and Shaq battle it out on the block. But yeah, certainly we're even watching today with Kenny Lofton, who's a big dude. He's not as tall as Kofi, but he's a big dude. Jalen Williams, a lot more slender. He was putting fouls on those guys. I think that his free throw shooting needs to get more consistent. That was something that tailed off and was a little inconsistent in Illinois, where it seemed like for a stretch, I don't know if it was sophomore year, or I know definitely late in his freshman year, he was 70+%, but there were moments where he was a lot lower than that, under 60%.
Yeah, and I also understand if you hear this and you hear the concerns about Kofi, you think, well, wait a minute, I get that. But the NBA, I mean, it's an investment for the NBA, and you want somebody who's not going to, it's all about finding that middle ground, exactly what you said, Derek. It's, can the defensive stuff not be such a plus minus point where it hurt, you know, the offense is just kind of a wash, and it's, you root for Kofi, you do.
Definitely.
I mean, God, he's such a good guy. He's a fun guy to cover. He's a really talented basketball player. I mean, he's going to make a lot of money playing this game. It's just a matter of where it's going to be, whether that be the NBA, the G League, an overseas route. But there are just some things, and every draft prospect, you know, Chet Holmgren's going to go number one or two, and people are like, well, wait a minute, here or there. It's just a different kind of stratosphere, I guess, where you're talking about where Kofi would maybe get taken or what his, you know, first year as a professional looks like.
Speaking of which, I saw a picture of Chet on Twitter. He had a quote about, yes, I do work out. Yes, I do eat. He is skinny as all get out. Like, I know that you've watched him, you noticed that, but he was even wearing some, like, tight-fitting sweatpants, and I don't know if his legs is as big as my arm around. I mean, he is a stick. It would be very interesting to see, and it probably, especially in terms of Kofi guarding him, go poorly for Kofi, but that would be a fascinating matchup just to see. And maybe, like, I don't know if Chet's even scrimmaging in this. He probably doesn't need to. He probably shouldn't.
Nice little workout brag, Piper. I don't know if his
I'm saying my arms are skinny, man.
No, it's, yeah, but then you watch it, like, it's weird. He's that guy, Kevin Durant, not to draw the comparison, but Kevin Durant was that guy where you're like, you look and you're like, how is this going to work? but it works. Like when you watch him on the basketball floor, you're like, okay, this, yeah, this works. Like he's probably stronger than he physically looks. He has to be. You can't look like that and be as strong as you look in this case. But yeah, man, I mean, you look at him, it's like, really? Like that would have been a dream matchup to see him in the NCAA tournament, wouldn't it? Like big, just different human Kofi is someone that college basketball doesn't really have. You know, Edie would have been fun to see go up against Chet.
Yep.
But you got to guard Chet too.
Absolutely.
And that is a struggle.
We should mention another thing. I don't know. I don't think we brought it up in the first segment, but combine related and especially Illinois related. I know we're going to get to someone asked to break down who's coming back on this roster from last year's team. There's a short list. Like, yeah. if you've tried to figure this out, there's been a lot of turnover. But Matthew Meyer, who's at the NBA Combine, did get invited, got measured yesterday. I think he was, I wrote it down, I think it was 6'9", 219, just shy of 220. I think he's listed at 6'9", 225, so about what you would expect. He has pulled out of 5-on-5 for today and tomorrow, so not playing 5-on-5. What does that mean as far as some guys do that because they have been given a guarantee? I know that Max Christie decided not to go 5-on-5, and he was quoted as saying, you know, I've been told I'll get picked anywhere between 20 and 40, so I feel good about my position. I don't have anything else to prove. I don't know if that's the sense with Mayer, who's not on mock drafts. Maybe he has already – I don't know. It's kind of interesting. Maybe he's got an injury or something, because if it's a guy trying to prove his spot, which it seems like he would be someone in that position.
Well, because he still has college eligibility. If he didn't think he had to prove his spot,
right,
he probably doesn't retain his eligibility, right?
Of course, and hit the portal. Like that was already a thought in his mind of coming back and having different options. And it's been reported of Illinois, North Carolina, of course, Arkansas. How many scholarships does Arkansas have? How much NIL? Two-part question. How many scholarships does Arkansas have? How much NIL money do they have available to throw around? Because they're in it with everybody.
Must-bus, man. Must-bus rules. The answer to both those questions, I think, is probably just all of it.
Endless?
All of it, yeah.
We need someone to start. What we're seeing with Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher, someone needs to go out Eric Musselman.
Who would do it? Who is the candidate to do it? Do you have to look SEC land?
Could be Calipari. I could see that. Because how does Calipari wear the fact that Arkansas is out recruiting him?
It's a good question.
No knock on, I mean, not really a knock on Arkansas.
As traditional as you think of a Kentucky, yeah, Calipari would be a guy. I don't know that Bruce Pearl would have probably wouldn't pack the same punch as if Cal did.
No. And Bruce has already had the FBI sniffing around his programs. He doesn't need to be like, hey,
check him out.
Yeah. We don't do anything wrong.
Yeah, I mean, they're cooking. Arkansas's got it moving right now. I don't know. Here's the thing. I have no idea how this is all going to work on the floor. That is so much talent to figure out. If we're talking Blues, you might see some line changes going on in
that's
Arkansas.
Right.
It's really wild how they're able to put it together. But then I want to talk to me in February or in January. That's, I'm not saying it's not going to work, but I need to see how this is all going to shape out for them.
You got to find guys that are going to be able to buy into some roles. And that's always, when you got a lot of talent, you got to, as Chester Frazier was saying to us in our podcast last week, if you have 12 guys who all expect to play, you're going to have problems. Like that's just not ultimately going to work out. And I think that comes into play with Illinois. And I know that, I think it was on our message board I was reading, that if Arkansas can do it, why can't Illinois go out and get Matthew Meyer and Pete Nance and just have just an unreal, I don't know if unreal, maybe that's going a little bit too far, but a lot of options in the front court, a lot of length, especially. And maybe if you're at other places, especially in Arkansas, if you're at Coleman Hawkins, you're saying, sorry, we're bringing in as many dudes as we can and we're going to figure it out. It's not really like, oh, well, Coleman is supposed to take this next step this year and he's slotted in as our starting four, so maybe we don't take Matthew Meyer. How do you think about that in particular? Is Illinois just in a different position in that sense, or and should they be? Should they look at it differently versus, okay, we're just going to go after whoever and Coleman's going to earn whatever minutes he earns when we put everybody on the floor?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because I think when you go in these living rooms as coaches to high school recruits, you draw up a path for them, right? And not every path is the same, but you do have to add talent to it. Like if you're not focusing on adding talent year over year, you end up like Illinois was, like, you know, 8-10 years, it's just not pretty. Or it's not sustainable. It's not at this level. It's a choice, right? You have to, and I know that's a simple answer, but do you want to develop these freshmen to stay around, sophomores to stay around, or do you want to go out there and just say, yeah, let me know what you decide, but I don't know. How much is Musselman going to focus on high school recruit, which, by the way, he got the number one player in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So he's hitting it on both ends here. It's unbelievable what he's able to do on the high school and in the portal thing, but I think you're going to see a lot of coaches have to reckon with how they want to go into this in the offseason. Remember, this is really the first one, Derek, the first offseason where it's the portal's flying around. I mean, the portal was active last year, but now everything is like a year. The NIL, the portal, all this is a year old now.
That's right.
And it's still young. And so I think you're going to see a lot of coaches have to ask themselves what they believe in as individuals, what the best option for them is as a program. And it's not always going to look the exact same. I don't know. You know, I guess his bodies of work come out and you'll see which one works. But it's tough. It is tough because you're balancing people's emotions too.
Mm-hmm.
And really, when you're recruiting at the level that some of these programs are, you're kind of balancing their livelihood in terms of how can you best set them up minutes-wise, development-wise, to take that step, which ultimately comes back for you guys as a program when you can say, look what we've done to get all these guys to the next level. It's a really interesting balance.
It's tough. It's tough for them to figure out. And I think that as we even look now, and I forget who it was this week, entered the portal, and we've talked throughout the spring, is that May 1st date going to ultimately hold up? Maybe it's not going to. I think that some coaches have pointed to it probably won't. I mean, why not? So then you do got to make those decisions as these players come back from the NBA draft combine and whether they're already in the portal or guys that aren't in it are going to then say, I'm going into the portal and I'm expecting to get a waiver. And those guys that are on your roster, there's that domino effect. I think that with Illinois, I think as you look at, and it's obvious to go to Coleman, and I'm curious because you were there. I think you were there when he was discussing about the offseason meetings and kind of where he's at and everything. And he did express excitement in what he can be going forward and showing his true skill set and everything. But, I mean, why wouldn't you if you're him and you say, okay, if Illinois does somehow, I don't think fans would have a problem with it because Matthew Meyer and Pete Nance, if you were to get both of them, let's be honest, those guys are both more proven than Coleman Hawkins. And if at that point Coleman says, I'm out, I want to go somewhere else, I think it is what it is. But on the other side of the coin, Matthew Meyer's a one-year rental. He's got 1 year of eligibility left. I think you also, as a coach, have to think about 1 year of Meyer versus probably 2 years of Coleman. That's not to say Coleman can't have a really, really good year, take a big step forward, and his skill set and versatility definitely fits the NBA. It's not out of the question that he has the type of season to put him on draft boards next year. But maybe it is, okay, would we want a year of Meyer versus what if we get 2 years out of Coleman?
Yeah, I mean, you do have to weigh that because senior year Coleman Hawkins, I mean, I think, Derek, you and I both think like, oh, you're going to see a big step forward from Coleman Hawkins this year. But then you start to like, in your mind, if you project out a little bit, like, that's a really good, really, really good basketball player. So it's all a balancing act, man. It's so hard to know exactly. I don't think any coach is going to tell you, like, this is what we're doing. You've got to follow the tea leaves a little bit and see how this all shakes out. I mean, in theory, Meyer and Nance, it's pretty good.
Yeah, right. I mean,
that's really, really good. But there's just so many more dynamics to figure out, and it's relationships matter. And on our podcast with Chester Frazier, he talked about that, and not specifically with regards to these two guys or with Coleman, just broadly how much it matters to if someone has to be the 11th, 10th, 11th, and 12th man. Someone has to do it.
That's right.
So how do you keep things going in a positive direction and you know let them understand it? And that comes down to relationships. And it's all of this is now starting to be in the same pot here. And you got to figure it all out.
Yeah, and there is a trickle-down effect. If you were to add a Matthew Meyer, and let's say Coleman sticks it out, let's say Coleman might even be in a situation. I think it would be interesting then. And look, we can go down. We always do these Illini basketball rabbit holes. I think our listeners love thinking about Illini basketball 365, 24/7. I think I did that backwards, but it doesn't matter. You get the point.
Count it.
And one. would you start Coleman at the five in that situation? Like, let's say you're adding Meyer and Nance. I don't know if that's some. Let's just count him out for now. Let's say you're adding Meyer. It's a more interesting fit in how you put those pieces together. Maybe it's Coleman at the five, Meyer at the four, Melendez at the three, Shannon at the two.
And then some combo of Clark and Epps.
Right. Or is it Danger at the five and Coleman competing with RJ or somebody as far as that starting spot? And then as you add in someone like Meyer, you're affecting how much a Ty Rogers plays as a freshman. You're affecting how much Luke Goody plays as a sophomore. I'm not saying that you don't be aggressive. I think that if you can get a Matthew Meyer, you try and go get that
you
dude.
You figure it out, right?
I mean, yeah. He played in the national title. He shoots the three well. He defends.
Long, he's tall.
Long, tall, versatile, mullet. Can guard multiple positions. The mullet is spectacular. I mean, you get Sky Clark's hair going. You get Matthew Mayer's mullet. That's a
good hair team.
It's a good hair team. It's a team that would play such a, in terms of Illinois, a very unique brand of basketball. I'm not calling them the Flying Illini by any means, but in terms of positionless, how fast they'd want to play, the way they'd probably do some, you have to game some things up defensively. You couldn't just guard, if you're playing Coleman at the five, you can't just guard Zach Edey one-on-one. You can't just guard Hunter Dickinson one-on-one, I don't think. Maybe you can do it with Trace if Trace comes back.
It's tough. And I'm like the president of the Coleman Hawkins Play the Five fan club. I love it. Now, how much, though? How much is the right amount to do that? Because you still are in the Big Ten, and Zach Edey still exists in the Big Ten, and Hunter Dickinson still exists. So how much can you do it? I don't know. And we're also saying this, Derek. We've seen Dane Danger do 0 seconds of things in a team setting on a basketball court, and we know they're excited about them or about him, and we've seen clips, and we understand why. But that's another thing you've got. Like, there's so many things to factor in, and I know Chester talked, and Brad's talked about it. Like, it used to be, okay, so-and-so's graduating, this makes sense. But and I think, obviously, the portal has changed that, but also just the concept of how basketball is kind of trending to this positionless changes it a little bit, too. But if Meyer's on the phone with you right now and saying, hey, I could see this working, I don't think you think twice about that. He's so good. And you want to – the big thing with Illinois, too, Derek, is obviously you want to keep at this level of where you're at, a play style, because right now you've kind of established yourself near the top, at the top, however you want to look at it, with those top upper echelon of the Big Ten. You don't want to lose that status. I mean, you worked really hard to get there. You're recruiting at a level that you're there. You don't want to lose that. And obviously, Meyer helps you stay there. Pete Nance helps you stay there. But so does the development of guys you have in the program. It's the most fascinating part of the offseason to me.
And I think it does bring into – you can talk about the stress it puts on the coaches. I think that there is some things that people don't like, obviously, about the new – reality of college basketball that is, it's like free agency. There's a lot of potential turnover. There's guys that normally would be locked into a scholarship and would not be willing to want or even probably even think about leaving or wouldn't want to pay the price of having to sit out a year are going to maybe even dangle, well, if I'm not 100% happy with everything, I might go in the portal. I might think about going somewhere else. And then you have the Miami situation with they're not the only ones, but the Nigel Pack was just so...
That was in your face.
To me, it was. Like, the moment he announced his commitment to Miami...
He didn't. The guy from LifeWallet did, right?
Or maybe he like, jumped the gun on it. Like, I think you're right. Because there were some people, like, in his mention, be like, why would you steal the moment? And he was trying to defend it, like, oh, he's announced it. But the fact is, regardless of how it played out, it was being announced within seconds of his commitment that he had inked a 2-year, $400,000 a year deal in NIL, and don't think for a second that wasn't part of the conversations of going to Miami. Now, there's the loophole of with the NIL, and as far as coaches, you can't facilitate that. I think the way you get around it is you go to your donors, you go to your people that have these NIL groups, and say, "What would you be? What would a projection be? What would you be willing to contribute if we were to try to get, or just in general?" Like, that's kind of maybe what you do. Like, you speak in generalities because you don't attach it to one player. But then again, it's like, okay, those are what the rules are, but then what's really going on behind the scenes? And that does tie in also with the conversation about Alabama and A&M as well. It's like, okay, you don't think Alabama's having conversations with their NIL groups of, we need this much money for this quarterback, and that's not coming up in conversations in living rooms or whatever? Like, that's the reality of the situation.
Welcome to it, man. Welcome to college athletics. Look, I still enjoy covering it. I enjoy watching it.
Oh, yeah.
I understand some people are going to struggle to get to that. That's okay. Maybe you won't ever get there. I don't know. Hey, go for it. But it's a new reality. It's a new reality of what it is.
And also, in terms of the quality of the game, if you're when you flip on, like you were talking about, what matters is a Saturday in January as far as game. When you tune in November through early April, the NIL situations is good for college basketball. It's good for the talent that's on the floor. It's good for
returning talent.
Returning talent, players staying in college longer, players that were for a brief second going to Australia or going to Overtime Elite or going the G League Unite. You're going to have a handful of those. You're going to have the Jalen Greens. You're going to have the Michael Fosters. But now they can make the money that they want to make, support their families, and go to school and have more exposure at playing at, you know, wherever it might be, versus doing it that other route. So I think that the talent that goes to college basketball because of this situation certainly helps the game. We do got to get to who's coming back for Illinois. We don't have to save too much time because there's not a whole lot of them.
Well, we've already covered Coleman Hawkins is coming back.
That's right.
Dane Danger was a mid-year transfer. RJ Melendez, who I think, along with Hawkins, people are, like, if you look at the returners, it's probably those two who everyone's like, all right, let's see what this leap is going to be. Luke Goody is back, and I really like Luke Goody's game. Brandon Lieb is back. Those are the five. Not a long
There you have it.
And now, again, we should also say, Derek, not all of that is transfer portal related. This was always going to be a big turnover year for Illinois with Trent Frazier, with Damonte Williams.
Plummer.
With Alfonso Plummer. I think the idea, obviously, was that everybody thought Kofi was going to end up making the professional leap. Still waiting to hear about Jacob Grandison and Austin Hutcherson. I have ideas, but
yeah,
it's hard to not, you know, you got to wait for an announcement if some capacity. Neither one of them announced they were entering the draft until, like, the list came out of, I guess, quote unquote, early entrants. Are they technically early entrants?
Maybe. I guess if you have eligibility remaining, you still are early entry. Although Jake both would have to opt back into a year.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I mean, they're both not draft prospects, so right. I guess
it's hard. I mean, it's hard to say with any certainty what they're doing. But right now, the five that you know, the five that we talked to after the summer or the spring workouts were Coleman Hawkins, Dane Danger, RJ Melendez, Luke Goody, and Brandon Lieb.
And I would imagine, and this is speculation, but as far as Grandison being a starter and a player that played significant minutes, if he wanted to come back, I think that announcement would probably already have been made. That's just my personal read on it. I don't think that he would be the one. I guess I could see him sit back and say, okay, who would be around me? What kind of transfers would they play? What would my role be? Because if you were to add Nance or Meyer, that would certainly
change things
for him. I think Hutcherson might be someone that, if it's down the line in the summer and you haven't filled those spots, I think he's probably better than an empty chair in terms of, like, having two open spots versus having Hutcherson in one.
Yeah, so right now there's three.
Correct.
There's three open spots. It's been pretty clear to us that Brad wants to keep one open, if at all possible, going into the season for a Danger-like situation, a mid-year transfer. So it's three, but I think I'm kind of thinking of it as two, unless it's like the perfect, absolutely perfect scenario to make it three. And you know they're expressing interest and two transfers, do the math and kind of work backwards with how much is going to be, how many scholarships are going to be left.
Yeah, and still potentially Courtney Ramey's still on the table. I think that was a really interesting one because he stayed very, very quiet about. He's had a long list of here's who's contacted me. It just hasn't been progressed of, he hasn't taken visits. He hasn't said a whole lot about who's really in that top contention. I think it's interesting as far as Illinois' approach with him, whether they want to go that route, how much they feel it's a need to have that veteran guard. I think it's very important, but that's just kind of my take on it. But maybe he'd want a role that would start to dip into what you're trying to give to Sky Clark and Jaden Epps, and then also Malachi Smith. Although I know there's been quite a bit of Louisville buzz out there for him, so that's where things stand with the Belleville native. Hey, we went, what was that, 20, 25 strong on Illinois basketball?
Hey.
That's easy. We could do that in our sleep.
Yeah, we really
do. We kind of get paid to do that.
We might actually do that in our sleep.
Right.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And Courtney Ramey, to your point, is really interesting because did he not declare, correct?
He declared, but he wasn't invited to the combine.
Right. So the fact that we're not seeing anything is interesting because we're not really seeing too much out of Nance or Meyer because their interests have been at the combine, at the G League camp, in the case of Nance.
Yep.
So, and I would assume you'll see in the next week or two, week and a half, 10 days, probably that pickup. But Ramey's, that's interesting because you're right. That has been as quiet gets.
Super quiet. And I know that, I mean, obviously, with the need for, or I see it as need or just the value of adding a veteran guard, the fact that he can play on or off the ball, the fact that he's a very, very good defender from St. Louis, close to home, I think it makes sense. I just would wonder, maybe he'd want a surefire, okay, I'm not worried about some highly touted freshman getting in my way as far as, for a guy that just had Marcus Carr show up on his campus and take the ball out of his hands a little bit. Maybe he, especially if he's looking at professionally, he needs to be a point guard. That might be what's in his mind.
Yeah, and on the Illinois side of it is you are very excited about your three guards, including Sincere Harrison. That. So how do you balance the amount of time that you want to take from them if you add a transfer guard? That's why I think in an ideal world, I don't have a name for this, Derek, but conceptually to me, an ideal world is a 12 to 14 minutes a night off the bench, and if things go haywire with one of the freshmen and it's slow, you know, the progression is slower, you're able to bring him in, or if an injury happens. We saw what happens with injuries last year. Hutcherson was out, Trent Frazier, Andre Curbelo. I don't think DeMonte stepped up and did what DeMonte needed to do at point guard, but I don't think that whole situation made the coaching staff the most comfortable with such a lack of point guards out there. And this is not just DeMonte's position.
Right.
But he stepped in, did what he needed to do. I don't know how interested Brad is in rolling the dice and possibly revisiting that situation in December. Or worse.
And I agree with you, my friend. We simply just ran out of time because we only got 2 hours, but a lot to talk about the Illinois basketball. It's funny, fans have been a little antsy because there's not been a whole lot of new news here recently, kind of in that holding pattern with the draft and everything. But as you were pointing out, it won't be too long where Pete Nance, Matthew Meyer, Courtney Ramey got to make those decisions to pull out of the draft or stay in. And we will have some answers after that as far as where Illinois stands with them and what their next moves are. So stay tuned for that. Joey Wagner, it was a lot of fun, my man. Love hanging out with you, chatting it up, and I appreciate you coming in.
Hey, a lot of fun, man. Until news happens, PGA Championships this weekend.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even check the leaderboard. Dang it. Rory went off today. He did. All right, we got to go. Tomorrow is a shortened show because of the Cardinals game. Lon will be back. Trevor's going to join us on the phone for a little bit. I'm sure we'll talk with Nolan Gorman and Matthew Libertor. Until then, everybody have a great night. This is The Drive.
When you order a doggy bag from Bulldog Disposal in Mahomet, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1, schedule a delivery of their 6-cubic-yard doggy bag at a cost of only $35. Step 2, you fill the doggy bag. Anything other than electronics, appliances, or hazardous materials are accepted. Step 3, schedule a time for your doggy bag to be picked up. And that's it. The doggy bag is designed to hold up to 1 ton of material. So get a doggy bag with Bulldog.